Missouri School of Journalism. Welcome to Global Journalist. I'm Jason McClure. In just a few days, all eyes will be on Rio de Janeiro, Brazil, for the 2016 Summer Olympics. Athletes from all over the world will compete, all in hopes of capturing the gold. But the road to these games have been littered with problems and concerns. The threat of the Zika virus has seemingly every athlete and visitor worried. There have been reports of rampant crime and uninhabitable dormitories. And then there are multiple reports that say the water that will be home to sailing, rowing, and other water sports is still teeming with raw sewage. Furthermore, for the people of Rio, there's the question of whether hosting the games will be worth it. Many people, of course, make money selling souvenirs, renting hotel rooms, and building stadiums. But are hosting the games worth the billions of dollars governments spend putting on a show for the rest of the world? Joining me now to discuss is Jules Boykoff. He's a professor and department chair of politics and government at Pacific University in Oregon. He's written multiple books about the Olympics, and he actually lived in Brazil for several months last year and will travel to Rio for the Games. He was also once a member of the U.S. National Under-23 soccer team. Jules Boykoff, welcome to Global Journalist.
Thank you.
You were living in Brazil recently. Tell us just a little bit about sort of what the mood of ordinary people is about these Games.
Sure. Well, as you mentioned, I lived in Rio last year from August through December, and the general mood at that time was one of basically a general yawn. There wasn't a lot of interest in the Olympics at the time. I went back just a couple weeks ago, and I talked to many people across the political spectrum from many different backgrounds, and a couple weeks ago, it was more like, let's just get this thing over with. There's been recent polling that has shown that nearly 2 in 3 Brazilians who are asked about the Olympics think that it'll actually cause more harm than good. So I think the overall mood right now is one of resignation and getting ready to do this thing, get it over with, and get back to the big issues of the day in Brazil, which include impeachment.
And Brazil is going through a political crisis. As you mentioned, President Dilma Rousseff is scheduled to go on trial, the former president. There are these reports of water pollution and crime and substandard buildings. Is this just sort of normal noise and bad press that often happens before the games, or is there really a bigger problem here?
Well, I think you make a good point that typically in the lead up to the Olympics, we see this kind of negative news about the hosts, are they prepared, and that sort of thing. So I think what we are talking about is a larger set of Olympic problems. In Rio, they're coming across in sort of magnificent technicolor. In the case of the water, it's a horrific situation. This was supposed to be something that was fixed up for the Olympics. 80% of the water flowing into places like Guanabara Bay was supposed to be clean. It's looking more like 20%. The government's saying 50%. But still, not nearly where it was supposed to be. So the problems that we're seeing in Rio are in many ways magnified, but I think the point is that it's not as easy to just blame it on Rio. These are Olympic problems. These are sports mega event problems, and they're taking place now in Rio de Janeiro.
And you mentioned that you felt there was sort of a feeling of fatigue, almost exhaustion on the part of people in Rio de Janeiro. What do we know about sort of the economic impact of the games? Because obviously, if people are making a lot of money off them, they're less likely to feel this way.
Right. That raises the question, for whom do the Olympics boom? And they do boom for some people, including some magnates who are very well connected to the Eduardo Paes mayor of Rio, like Carlos Carvalho, for example, who's building up the Olympic Village. He'll convert it into luxury condos. So he's quite enthusiastic about the prospects moving forward. But if you talk to everyday people in Rio, there's really very little that they will benefit from. There could be a slight uptick in commerce around the games. But even then, Rio is a huge tourist city. And the economics and research on tourism shows that in cities where there is a lot of tourism already, there's not a huge benefit in hosting the Olympics, even with tourism. So I would say it really depends who we're talking about. Certain classes will benefit. Everyday people of Rio, not so much.
And you've written about anti-Olympic political activism at recent games. Now, in the run-up to the World Cup in Brazil just 2 years ago, there were big demonstrations that sort of centered around that event. We're not seeing protests of the same scale now in Rio focused on the Olympics. Why is that?
Well, first, I think we need to note that back in 2014, when Brazil hosted the Men's World Cup, there was incredible repression on the part of police and security officials on those activists. And so that kept a lot of the more middle-class activists out of the street who just wanted to avoid the tear gas. I would say that when I lived in Rio from August through December, I tracked a number of activist groups who were ramping up activities. And I got to say, it's interesting more widely that over the past year, there have been more protesters that have hit the streets in Brazil than in the rest of the world combined. Of course, that includes the anti-Rousseff protesters, the right-wing protesters who wanted to have the president impeached, but also a number of left-wing protesters and a number of people who are actually targeting the Olympics themselves. For example, there's the Comité Popular da Copa do Mundo e das Olimpíadas, which is the popular committee of the World Cup and the Olympics, that has a set of protests that are planned from August 1st through the 5th. They're already set to go, and these things are going to be big.
And if you could elaborate, we mentioned that President Dilma Rousseff is about to go on trial to be impeached, essentially. What do you think this current political turmoil, what will it mean for this spectacle?
Well, it's interesting because I think before the political spectacle actually gave Olympic organizers a free pass, so much attention was on the impeachment process and the wider economic issues that Brazil was experiencing that basically the organizers flew under the radar. Those organizers started to get nervous when it looked like Rousseff might get impeached during the actual Olympics. And so they went to the Senate, the Brazilian Senate, and asked them to not impeach the President Rousseff. They appear to have agreed, the Senate. But if you followed Brazilian politics over the last year, you know that nothing is for certain. So think about this. If the president were impeached during the Olympics, which is entirely possible, you could have political mayhem on the streets across Brazil, not just Rio.
And if I could get you to look in your crystal ball just for a moment, looking forward 5 years from now, 10 years from now, when people look back at these games, what do you think their legacy will be?
Well, as you know, prediction is always tricky business. There have been some positives. One I would point to is the building of the metro line out into the west part of the city, if they get it done for the Olympics, that is. It's the Linea Quattro, the Metro 4 line that they're extending out. And generally with Olympics, transportation can be built up to the benefit of everyday people. In fact, that Linea Quattro that'll extend from the southern zone of Rio, like Copacabana and Ipanema, out to the western zone where a lot of the Olympics are happening, has a stop in Rocinha, which is the largest favela. This could have a long-term positive benefit, more transport network. So I think if they continue to build out that network, that could be good, both environmentally and otherwise. But when it comes to the environmental legacy, the water, that's a debacle that really needs fixing. And I don't know if they can get that quite right in the next 5 years.
Jules Boykoff, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
A reminder that this is Global Journalist. I'm Jason McClure. This week, a look at the upcoming Olympics and the challenges and opportunities having the Games presents for host cities. To broaden our discussion now, we'll bring in three other people who study the Olympic movement. Joining us now from Montana, Rick Burton. He's a professor of sports management at Syracuse University. Before that, he was the chief marketing officer for the U.S. Olympic Committee at the 2008 Beijing Games. From London, Valerie Vihoff, a research fellow at the University of Bonn, Germany. In addition to writing two books on the Olympics, she won a silver medal in rowing for the German Olympic team in the 2000 Sydney Games. And from Singapore, Eva Kassens-Noor, an associate professor of urban and transport planning at Michigan State University. She's consulted for two Olympic Games on transportation issues. Welcome to all of you. Eva Kassens-Noor, let me start with you. We heard Jules Boykoff talking about the economic impacts of a game. What do you see that the research shows with regard to economic growth that can be spurred by staging a spectacle like this?
So in terms of economic impact, they've largely agreed that they're quite minimal. They're focused more on construction, and it's only in the run-up of or towards the Olympic Games. They mostly cost more than they would benefit. And in terms of transportation, Jules very carefully avoided the issue of transportation and the bus rapid transit lines, which have huge impacts negatively on local residents along the lines.
Oh, with respect to the bus rapid transit lines that are being built in Rio de Janeiro.
That's right.
And why do you think that these bus rapid transit lines are a bad idea?
So we've done, with a group, we've done research on the impact that they have. And initial results basically show that they're largely cannibalizing into existing bus routes. They are cannibalizing into active transportation modes like walking and biking, so they're replacing a lot of sustainable trips that were already existing. In terms of the greatest hope was that they would reduce automobiles on the roads, and that is not the case. The latest study showed that it was only reducing those automobile trips by 2.4%.
Well, let me turn this to Rick Burton. Put some of the criticism about the Rio Games in context for us. We heard Jules Boykoff talking a bit about this. It does seem like there's sort of a cycle where for a city, there's sort of this euphoria after the Games are awarded. Then there's sort of a period of bad press and criticism when sort of the hard work, the land purchases and the buildings are built. And then there's sort of this euphoria that occurs again when the Games occur and everyone sees these fantastic athletes competing. If you look at other recent games, how do some of the problems that Rio is having, how do they compare?
Well, I think they're worse than what we saw in Athens, and Athens was pretty bad. Sochi in 2014 got hammered for a lot of their social views, for lack of a better way to call it. I think Rio's gotten the worst that I can remember in the last 20 years. But one of the questions that you have to ask is whether or not bad news is really bad news. From a branding standpoint, Rio is getting worldwide visibility, and I think we're going to ultimately see these great cutaway shots, these aerial photographs of this sprawling city that lays up against the ocean. And my wonder is whether or not Rio's brand won't ultimately be enhanced by everything that the Olympic movement will bring to them. There's no question bad press is bad press, but I'm not convinced that bad press is always long-lasting. So I think there's some pieces for us to find out over the course of the next few years.
And so in other words, the sort of fantastic, compelling television that the Olympics is, in a way, outweighs all the criticism that comes in advance of the Games and all the stories about how the bay is filled with sewage and there's high crime and some of these other issues.
Well, I think it depends on the kind of the sophistication of the media culture in which viewers or readers are actually following these games. Two-thirds of the world's population may not know that any of these problems are going on. And when they finally do tune into the games, a lot of what we're talking about will not have been made aware to them. They may tune in on August 7th really to see their country march in the opening ceremonies or to see a particular athlete participate in a particular sport, and none of these issues will exist. And I know that that could sound short-sighted, but I think what's interesting is in media cultures like the West, this is being discussed and debated quite a bit, but that may not be the case worldwide.
And Valerie Feehoff, in your view, as we talk about this, what's sort of the best way to understand or measure the legacy of an Olympics Games on a particular city?
Well, I guess it's quite difficult because, for example, the Oggi study for London showed, which was published in December 2015, it's very difficult to measure what are the actual effects of legacy or of the Olympic Games, because as the report stated as well, it's very hard to define the counterfactual. So what would have happened without the Games? And to just assume that none of this money would have been spent at all is not really tenable. So it's quite hard to then define what is actually a consequence of the Games and what would have happened if the money would have been spent in different ways.
And if I understand correctly, the London Games, people generally view them as having had something of a long-term positive impact on the city in that these areas of East London have been developed quite significantly where the Games took place. Is that not the case?
That definitely is the case. So East London has changed dramatically. There is a new park that wasn't there before. The transport infrastructure has been massively improved, although, again, that was planned before and would probably have happened anyway. There's a lot of new housing, and there's some progress on this convergence agenda, which is the idea that the residents of the host boroughs will have the same opportunities as everyone else in London within the next 20 years. But there's, of course, also a lot of criticism saying, well, for example, the living standard or the qualifications or the level of unemployment are improving in East London, not because people are better educated or they're getting more jobs, but because the local people who lived there before are being pushed out and replaced by a different kind of class of people. So I think it's very difficult. I think there's very clear and obvious advantages and positive legacies. And the park does attract a lot of visitors and there's a lot going on there. There is some kind of sporting legacy. But I think it's always important to also keep an eye on those who don't profit from the games.
And Rick Burton, I wanted to return to a point that you had raised earlier. We've talked some about the economics of the games, and it seems like sort of the short-term direct impact can be quite limited. But you were speaking about the games also from a branding perspective, which I think is quite an interesting way to talk about them. The Beijing Games in 2008 were quite obviously sort of a coming out party for China and its sort of new economic and political power in the world. And I think that's, to some degree, that's what Russia was also seeking with the Sochi Games. Other cities like Barcelona or Atlanta maybe weren't considered global cities in the same way they were after the Games, perhaps. So if we leave just sort of the money aside and the infrastructure that's built, how can we measure sort of the brand boost that comes from hosting an Olympics?
Well, like the other speakers have mentioned, it's difficult to do both before the Games and even after the Games. These are only the third Olympics that have been held in the Southern Hemisphere. And you'd have to go back to 2009 when Rio bid to host these Olympics and ask what their objectives were long term. Were they concerned that South America was not as visible in the Northern Hemisphere? And this was a chance for Rio de Janeiro to emerge as the leading city in the Southern Hemisphere. A lot of people talk about the BRIC countries, Brazil, Russia, India, China. The B in that BRIC is Brazil. And these games put Rio on the map as a city capable of doing not only what they did in the 2014 World Cup, but also here with the Olympics. I think that the protesters that you're showing on the screen have a voice. The Olympics create that voice for many different parties. But from a long-term branding standpoint, I think Rio will probably come out as being a city capable of taking on this kind of challenge.
This is Global Journalist. I'm Jason McClure. This week, a look at the upcoming Olympics and the litany of problems that faced Rio before the Games and could still pop up during the two-week-plus event. Joining us now from Montana, Rick Burton. He's a professor of sports management at Syracuse University and a former chief marketing officer for the U.S. Olympic Committee. From London, Valerie Feehoff, a research fellow at the University of Bonn, Germany, who has written two books on the Olympics and is a former Olympic rower. And from Singapore, Eva Kassens-Noor, an associate professor of urban and transport planning at Michigan State University. She consulted for two Olympic Games on air travel around the cities. If you're interested in more Global Journalist content, visit us online at globaljournalist.org. There you can read our ongoing series of interviews with journalists in exile around the world and coverage of foreign affairs and press freedom issues. We're also on social media. You can like us on Facebook or follow us on Twitter at Global Journ. And Valerie Feehoff, one thing that I wanted to ask you about was the bidding for the 2024 Games, because in those games we saw in Hamburg, Germany, they had become quite close to submitting a final bid or being considered as a finalist. And ultimately there was a referendum there and the people voted not to bid on the games. And then we saw something similar as well in the United States, where Boston essentially took itself out of the running in the face of sort of widespread public opposition there. So what is happening?
Well, I think that people seeing the Olympics and thinking about the major investments that this requires maybe have started to wonder whether these sums could not be invested in a different way. Maybe that I think it's a general impression that a lot of the profit is kind of by the IOC or by some major investors. And I think, for example, in Hamburg, the protesters and the activists who were against it were kind of quite well organized. And I think it played into their hands that the mayor and those in support of the Games did not really take it seriously, and they didn't actually consider the possibility that it might really be rejected. So it came as a big surprise.
And Eva Kassens-Noor, I was in Montreal, which hosted the 1976 Games. Just a few years ago, I visited, and the Olympic Stadium there was just sort of crumbling. And actually, the news agency Reuters just did a photo essay of different Olympic sites around the world that are basically overgrown with weeds or aren't even there anymore. So what's sort of the best way for these cities that are bidding on the Games to sort of develop without building these white elephants that are essentially worthless after 2 weeks?
Yeah, I think the best way would be to bid with the right people, meaning we have essentially a very new climate in which these mega events take place. So one reason Valerie just mentioned is basically the knowledge about previous Games and how they're spread. The other important issue comes in that with this knowledge comes a large social, internationally organized movement that is bringing these issues to the forefront of the public. And the third larger issue is that these events become more and more international and reliant on international consultants. And so if you look at this combination, you're having a new conditions in which mega events succeed or fail. And they fail most likely in Western regions, which have the strong opposing movements like in the US or in Germany. And so one thing to make sure of is that you're bidding with the right people, and the right people cannot be the boosters alone anymore. It cannot be the elites. You have to bring in an entire population. You have to bring in the residents. You have to bring in even anti-Olympic movements, because they have very, very valid points that have to be considered when cities are bidding. You have to look at the right time. So we have kind of a continental rotation when it's better to bid or not to bid. We have the right place in terms of what should get upgraded within a city. Where do the residents want new developments or not? We have, of course, let's say the right purpose. So why is a city bidding for an Olympic Games? Is that justified? Do they need the Olympics to drive forward that development or that goal anyways? And you have for the right reasons. So meaning, what are the legacies that could potentially come out of it? And you specifically mentioned degraded infrastructure. So in recent years, architects have made strides in how to repurpose these stadia in terms of shopping malls, or as far as I know, in Hamburg, they wanted to turn into a shipyard terminal. Or you can look at into housing developments that you change the Olympic Stadium into housing and a large park in the middle. So it's about creativity and repurposing those large infrastructures that the white elephants won't exist anymore.
And Rick Burton, you did work at the U.S. Olympic Committee, and the U.S. hasn't hosted an Olympics since 2002. New York lost out in 2012 in their bid. Chicago failed in its bid for these current Games. Why do you think bids from the United States have been coming up short so recently? Is there some chance that'll change in the future?
Well, I do think Los Angeles has an excellent chance to win the bid, but largely the losses for New York and Chicago were driven by our relationship with the IOC voters. And there was a period of time, and there's still some remnant of that left over, where a number of IOC members were really displeased with the amount of money that the U.S. was receiving from the IOC. And they used their vote to keep the U.S. from receiving the Games. The U.S. recently changed their broadcast contract and sponsorship agreements with the IOC, and I think that's going to really help Los Angeles out.
And Valerie Feehoff, if I could turn it to you, just to return to this issue of Hamburg and Boston essentially rejecting the Games when they were so close to being potentially chosen. Is there a risk in this for the International Olympic movement, and that it becomes somewhat easier to hold the Games in authoritarian countries, or even where there's sort of a top-down culture where a government can just come in, as in Sochi, and spend billions of dollars sort of without the consent of the local people?
I think that is a real risk for the IOC, because they do rely on the Games being attractive to new host cities, because they do need a new city to host the Games for them every 4 years. And I think the IOC very much realized that this was very negative for their image if the impression was created that only authoritarian and non-democratic countries would host the Games or would be willing to host this. So They have embarked on a process of kind of written and changing and kind of a new agenda 2020, where they are trying to address some of these issues. But I think it is quite a danger for the IOC if this kind of impression spreads, because it will then become self-fulfilling in a way, I would fear, so that democratic countries more and more feel actually maybe it's not the right thing for them to do.
And Eva Kassens, Noor, I spent some time looking at the Olympic website and the history of the games. The modern games started in 1896. In the first century of the games, they were hosted in Asia twice, in Tokyo in 1964 and then in Sapporo in 1972. Now, after Rio, the next three games will be in South Korea for the 2018 Winter Games. The 2020 Summer Games will be in Tokyo. The 2022 Winter Games will be in Beijing. So there's the next three games will be in Asia. What do you see driving this sort of geographic shift in who hosts the Olympics?
Well, I think one reason is that, as Valerie already said, they moved because of the large resistance that, I mean, Hamburg and Boston weren't the first referenda. There have been several in Europe, and so I feel like that was one shift that more and more autocratic countries bid for the games under the old mantra of boosters coming forward and advertising largely only the benefits of what the Olympic Games or other mega events could bring. So I think that's why you see that large shift. That being said, I think thereafter, especially now with the 2024 bidders, like LA would be an excellent candidate because it's been known to be one of the very few cities that actually have made a profit from the Olympics. So they have, after Montreal, they came to LA, and I believe that the IOC could think that LA could do this again, or Paris, who's bid now, I think that's, if I'm right, the fourth bid in a row with one cycle of interruption, where the bid has been carefully phrased and rephrased again to support local goals as well as IOC votes and IOC member goals.
And Rick Burton, our time grows short. We have just about 30 seconds left. Looking forward, what do you think the legacy of the Rio Games will be for that city?
I think it'll be positive in the end, unless there's some unforeseen terrorist activity, but really hopeful for the IOC that these ultimately are considered to have been good games. I'm not sure they'll be great, but I think they could be very good.
And let me leave you with this last question, Rick. What's your prediction for the countries that will finish with the top three medal count?
Well, I think you'd have to expect the Americans to do well, and I think also I'd be looking for the UK, the British, and also the Germans.
That's going to have to do it for this edition of Global Journalist, a production of the Missouri School of Journalism. Many thanks to Jules Boykoff, Rick Burton, Valerie Feehoff, and Eva Kassens-Noor for joining us. Our executive producer is Joshua Kranzberg. Our senior producers this week are Jinhong Chen and Javila Ruskaskate. Our studio director is Travis McMillan of the Reynolds Journalism Institute. Our audio engineer is Pat Akers of KBIA, Columbia, Missouri. For all of us here at Global Journalist, I'm Jason McClure. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next week.